You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Tinnitus, a persistent phantom ringing, is a condition that is prevalent in noise-exposed societies such as Aotearoa. It's currently resisted treatment until now. A study from the University of Auckland, led by audiologist Grant Searchfield, has had encouraging results regarding mitigating the condition. I spoke to Associate Professor Grant Searchfield about the results this morning and started by asking what tinnitus actually is.
So tinnitus is sound heard in the ears. And it shouldn't be there. There's no sound in the environment. It affects a wide range of the population, but it's often associated with a hearing loss or exposure to loud sounds, going to a gig, working around noise and those sorts of things. Really prevalent. For a lot of people, it's not a problem, but for a smaller percentage of people, it can become something that's ever-present, really annoying. It drives attention towards it, affects sleep, and it can result in depression and anxiety as well.
And you mentioned, touched on it a little bit there, but is there a demographic that's particularly at risk for it, or does it not really discriminate?
It doesn't really discriminate on income or gender. It seems to be slightly higher in males, probably due to traditional job, place, work, noise exposure, but it does tend to increase with age. But that's probably also associated with hearing loss as well. So the main risk factor for tinnitus is exposure to loud sound.
So it's not caused by any actual stimuli, but instead is possibly neurological?
Yeah, it's a phantom perception. So it's actually what the brain is trying to do to make up for changes in the auditory system. So in trying to compensate for a change, it actually is creating its own activity, which then the brain perceives as sound. And that's fine if the brain can then detune itself to that and can learn, but often then that results in anxiety, and that will then drive attention to that sound, and with that more and more focus on it, it becomes stronger and well entrained within the auditory pathways. So a person has quite a lot of difficulty actually just learning to ignore it, which would be great. But it doesn't happen that way.
What kind of preventative measures can people invest in to avoid tinnitus in the first instance?
Yeah, so the best way to prevent tinnitus is to be careful around noise exposure. So it's being aware how loud the sound is that you've been exposed to, but also so how long you've been exposed to that. So if you've been around loud sound, try and take a break from it. Even little mini breaks in and around songs or music or working in noise, you know, that can help a lot. So just being aware that noise is damaging, and one of the first signs of that can be tinnitus.
Fantastic. So what has the literature looked like regarding treatment before you published the paper? Have there been any really successful mitigating measures?
Well, research has been out there for a drug treatment for tinnitus for decades, and so far it hasn't been particularly successful. The mainstay of therapy is the use of either cognitive behavioural therapy or the use of background sound and hearing aids when people have hearing loss. But what we find with all these treatments is they work for some people some of the time. And what we really need to do is to develop more personalised therapy. And that's been the driving, a starting point for what we've come up with. And we use a combination of digitally rendered sounds, games for tinnitus. They're designed to help the person ignore their tinnitus sound, and also counselling in the form of digital therapeutics, so based on the individual's cell phone. And we think that what we've been able to show so far is if we tailor the therapy to the individual, taking into account their own needs, their goals, we can get a much better response than a sort of a universal approach of a one-size-fits-all.
So what were the participants' criteria and what was the rationale for that?
So we recruited people that were adults, so over 18-year-olds, who were smartphone users because we were obviously using an app-based. And they had to have a chronic tinnitus, so one that was longer than 6 months, because less than that, it can spontaneously improve, so we wanted to make sure that the people had tinnitus. And also, they had to have a level of severity that was really affecting their daily quality of life. And that was just a benchmark so that we could show improvement against an established criteria. And we used a standardized questionnaire widely used around the world for determining whether they had that degree of problem. And then we applied that questionnaire at 6 weeks and 12 weeks following our intervention, which was the digital therapeutic, which I mentioned, or else another app downloaded from app stores, which is based around using white noise or nature sounds to interfere with the tinnitus.
So in terms of the theory that you use to back up your interventions, would it be fair to say that you kind of utilise the concept of neuroplasticity in the treatment?
Oh, absolutely, yes. It's heavily based on neuroplasticity and neural networks. In our case, it's based on 20 years of work in that space, and we've done a number of studies, particularly recently, utilising artificial intelligence to map neural networks and to understand how they are modified by sound and by auditory training and so on. And fundamentally, what we're doing is really rewiring parts of the brain in response to the therapy that were rewired in response to whatever caused the tinnitus. So we're trying to reverse that underlying changes within the brain that form the tinnitus sound.
So how successful was the trial? What percentage of participants experienced an improvement?
Yeah, so we were really excited by the trial outcomes. So 65% of the people after 12 weeks in our treatment group showed clinically significant change in their tinnitus. And what we mean by that is it's a real meaningful change, not just a change that statistically shows up, but something that meaningfully changed the way that tinnitus affects their quality of life. We also saw an improvement within the other group, but that was much smaller. That was more in the sort of 40% range. And on average, through our intervention, the degree of change was clinically meaningful, but in the other app, it fell below that criteria. And there are a number of other measures that we did where our therapy outperformed the other, which is really encouraging. And when we look at the results that we obtained relative to some others in the literature, we showed that really we were outperforming many over a much shorter period of time, and we think that we can, you know, further improve this. And so those are our next steps, is we're going to be investing more in the software and the design and improving some of that based on feedback that we got. And then we'll be undertaking a trial with a large group of people eventually that will enable us, hopefully, to be able to make this wider available internationally as well.
You kind of answered my last question there. I was going to ask if you see the interventions being implemented in a wider context anytime soon. Could you maybe touch on what are the barriers to that?
So there are lots of ideas that people have that they think are good ideas, and they see the opportunities potentially to commercialise those and translate them into clinical practice. And over my 20 years of doing this, we've had ideas that we've tried to take that next step. And, you know, we've been really encouraged, but ultimately they've sort of fallen over the last barrier. but recently, with just enough investment to actually create a prototype, we found that by having something that we can demonstrate to people, that interest from investors and entrepreneurs increases rapidly. And we've recently formed a spin-out company from the University of Auckland called True Silence, and that's hopefully going to be the vehicle for us eventually to move to market and be able to make this available. Our plans are, you know, it's been very much a New Zealand-based research strategy, and that will continue immediately, but then we'll look to trial in Canada as a North American proxy for future release in the United States, where we hope to get FDA approval. And once we've overcome that particular hurdle, then obviously other regulatory areas around the world become a possibility. So we're looking to make this available. It's, you know, exciting for us. We, of course, don't want to overreach and overextend our expectations around this. But for us, it's a combination of 20 years of work, some successes, some setbacks, and we've been able to put together a lot of this work and effort of, you know, a number of researchers, a number of students over the year, over the years, together in something that hopefully everybody will be really, really proud of when it does get out there, and hopefully it will be make a big impact.
That was me speaking with Associate Professor Grant Searchfield from the University of Auckland Audiology Department about his recent research with encouraging results regarding tinnitus treatment.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.